This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. A Friday where we had more confirmation hearings. We've already played you some of that. We're about to talk about the cultural ratchet that only goes left. Is that gone now? Or has that situation changed? We'll discuss that here in just a moment. Someone wants to know, why does liberal Aunt Peggy find value in communism? What's the appeal in it for her? We'll talk about that. Maybe a little Medal of Honor, Japan stuff. All that and more coming up on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. Now, someone sent in this one, Jay Steele. You aptly described our politics as a ratchet rather than a pendulum, never swinging back and forth, but always ratcheting further and further left. With Trump's return and countries across the West rejecting their leftist leaders, are we finally done ratcheting? She said, I'm emailing from a Pure Talk phone. Her name's Diana, and she requested the bar. Are we finally done ratcheting? I don't know. I doubt it, but I don't know. So let me first of all explain the concept really quickly for in case you're unfamiliar with it. Our culture overall, not focusing on one election or one year or something like that, but overall our culture for the entirety of my life, the entirety of your life, has only gone to the left, only to the left. Sometimes super, super fast, sometimes really, really slow, but only left. That's not even debatable, honestly. It's not even debatable. Gay marriage is actually a great example of this. Barack Obama was not exactly a president from ancient history. Barack Obama was president from 2008 to 2016. Like 5 minutes ago, he was president. When Barack Obama was starting out, in fact, for really the entirety of his career, he was loudly and vocally anti-gay marriage. Today, every single Democrat in the United States House and Senate says that trannies exist. That is warp speed moving to the left. It's just one example, but warp speed moving to the left. Why is that? Well, a big part of that is the niceness of the right. The right does not have a conquering mentality. And without an aggressive, offensive, conquering mentality, you will be conquered by the communists eventually. Maybe it'll be really fast, maybe it'll be really slow, but because communists are aggressive, it's a religion of conquest. They're aggressive and they believe in conquest. If you feel differently, that only ends one way. And one of the greatest examples of that is actually what we're about to experience: illegal immigration, mass deportation, like all the things that come with that. So before we even get to what's coming with Trump and his presidency, let's talk about something that's been happening in this country really since the 60s. They figured out, this of course was a Democrat thing, and Rhino Republicans helped them with it. They figured out, hey, these Americans, we want to do all these things, all these great society welfare programs. We want to figure out how to massively increase the size of the government and buy off as many votes as possible. How do we pass law that will ensure we can win elections in the future, more of them than we're winning now? That's really all it came down to. And Democrats back then figured out what tyrants and evil people have known for the longest time. I read that quote from Plato a long time ago, if I remember right, where they talk about a tyrant, an evil person in government. He prefers the company of foreigners because people who are citizens of his country, patriotic citizens, they don't want him to rip apart the country. They have a loyalty to the country. You have a loyalty to America. So if you're an evil tyrant and you don't care about the country, well, I'll just bring in some people from out of town. They don't love this place like you do. You're an annoyance. So I'll bring them in and they'll be my new friends. Well, that happened years and years and years ago. So for decades, people were brought into this country in mass. I don't mean legal immigration. I worked hard. I got my citizenship. I'm talking mass importation of foreigners, legal and illegal, I should point out. Every year there's a new legal immigration program. Well, we definitely need 50 more thousand people from Somalia. That's what Minneapolis needs, right? So this has been decades of this. And Republicans who love the cheap labor, Republican politicians, they want it to keep going too. So decade after decade after decade after decade, what, we got 60 plus years of the mass importation of foreigners into the United States of America. 60 plus years bringing us to now, the year 2024. How many should we deport? Let's pick a number. Whatever number you pick, someone will argue against it. I would say 50 million is a good number to start on. It's probably more than that. Let's say 50 million illegals are here. It's more than that if we're going over the decades, but 50 million, that's our number. 50 million illegals. Now, those illegals, amongst those 50 million, there are most definitely going to be hardened criminals, murderers, rapists, all those things. Everybody, for the most part, everyone wants those people gone. Well, yeah, of course. Oh, prioritize the criminals. Everyone wants those. Sounds good. Sounds good. Okay. Let's move past them. Let's say there were 5 million of them. Okay. So we still have 45 million left. Some of those are women, children. Some of those are dudes. Maybe not hardened criminals, but guy's got a drinking problem, got a DUI. We'll focus on the DUI group. Let's say there's 2 million of those. How many Americans on the right want those guys gone too? Well, I know you're yelling at the radio. I do. Okay, good. Me too. That's good. Now they're gone. Now we have 43 million left. Do we want all of them gone? Every single one. And even if you are a yes on that, think about the norms and normas in your life. Do they want all of them gone? Men, women, children, all 50 million gone. Most people, if they're answering honestly, say no. Well, no, not the kids. No, they've been paying taxes here for a while. Well, no, he's a law-abiding citizen. He's been my landscaper for some time. But no. Most people will get there. But we're not even having an immigration talk. This is about the cultural pendulum. If they imported 50 million and you deport 49 million, we've still gone left. The ratchet has still gone their way. We're still not back to where we were before they started the mass importation of foreigners. We are still further left than we were before. But because we don't have an aggressive mindset of conquest, we try to bail water out that they purposely let in on every issue. This goes well beyond immigration. On every issue, we will slowly but surely try to bail water out on this and bail water out on that. But you're never going to get all the water. I mean, look, we don't want to just focus on the bailing water. After all, we want to be kind about things. You know what? DEI is actually a great example of this. Joe Biden's White House, this just came out earlier today. DEI offices are closing all over the country. Private corporations, the FBI just shuttered their DEI office. The Biden White House, of course, they're Democrats. They're not laying off it. They put this out today.
President Biden promised that he would have a cabinet that looks like America, and he did.
We're talking about this incredible, full-throated commitment to equity.
There's more women of color, more people on the cabinet with perspectives that have never been around a decision-making table before.
I'm the member of President Biden's cabinet.
We got it. Oh, he's so equal. He's so equitable. Well, what's DEI? DEI is aggressive cultural Marxism that is open, institutionalized, anti-white racism. That's exactly what it is. Anti-white man racism. That's what DEI is. It is the open, very, very open and honest acknowledgement that you will be prejudiced against white men. That's what DEI is. Now, does closing a DEI office, let's say at the FBI, we'll make it about the FBI. Does closing the DEI office at the FBI, does it get us back to where we should be? Let's talk about that briefly, and then we'll move on to some other Ask Dr. Jesse things. Before we talk about that, to figure out how far away we've gone from where we started, maybe we should learn more about why they put the things in the Constitution they put in there. Probably pretty important, wouldn't you agree? Or we can go even further back than that. What about the history of the ancient Christian church? Stories from the book of Genesis. Do you want to know more about these things? Hillsdale College is offering more than 40 free online courses. There's no cost. I can't stress that enough. There's an education from the elite institution of Hillsdale College waiting for you at no cost. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. That's where you go to enroll. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. Go. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. I just want to finish this thought about the cultural ratchet and how we've only gone left. And I brought it up when it comes to immigration, illegal immigration. You bring in 50 million people, even if you deport 49, you have not done enough. You haven't even gotten back to where you were before, period. Now, culturally, right now, DEI is all in the news. Biden puts out a DEI video from the White House today. The FBI announced last night their DEI office is shutting down, and we're all celebrating. Woo, that's great. Nice. Okay. But does that get us back to where we should be? How did the DEI office start? How did institutionalized anti-white man racism, how did it get there? Who put it there? What are their names? And let's say their names are Chris and Corey. If Chris and Corey are at the FBI, working anywhere in the government, and they decided to institutionalize anti-white man racism, known as DEI, and start an entire DEI wing for the federal law enforcement arm, so the FBI could fill itself up with a bunch of evil communists who will infiltrate your church, then I need Chris and Corey arrested. They have to be arrested. Closing down the DEI office does not get us back to where we should be. Getting us back to where we should be involves closing down the DEI office and throwing Chris and Corey in prison so the next little animal in the government who wants to do things like that is too afraid to do so. And then we put into place rules that we used to have in this country that say you're not allowed to discriminate against anyone for any reason. Or if you want to take it a step further, when it comes to private businesses, maybe we do what we should have done all along and say you should be able to discriminate against anyone for any reason. That's part of living in a free country. If I want to announce that I'm only hiring Asians, well, I should be allowed to do so. If I want to announce that I'm not serving
Indians in my restaurant. No more Indians in here. I wouldn't recommend it. It's probably not morally right, but legally it should be. But you see, you have to untie knot after knot after knot after knot after knot to get back to where you were originally. And the truth is, we are way too soft and nice on the right to do those things. That's why you've heard me yell when it comes to illegal immigration about this line so many of them are taking. Well, we got to start with the criminals first. They're all freaking criminals. The public voice, the messaging should be, it is, in large part, I want to give them credit. They've really been great, but in large part, the messaging should be, if you're here illegal and we find you, you are gone, period. In fact, if your children are illegal and they're in school, better pull them out and go back home. We'll find them, period. If you're illegal and you seek out emergency medical care in this country, you'll get the medical care you need, but you will never leave the hospital and step foot in the United States of America again. You go right from there to the bus back to where you came from. That should be the messaging. Loudly, all of you, gone. And then... then you find the people responsible. And I should note, the evil demons responsible for what they've done to this country, they're currently worried about being found. That's why you're even starting to get a little bit of finger pointing. Alejandro Mayorkas, head of DHS, took over as head of DHS and used his role to open up the United States of America to murderers and rapists. He flew and bussed as many foreigners into this country as he possibly could. And now the books are about to be opened because Donald Trump won an election. Mayorkas is worried about exactly what I just talked about.
Do you think none of those things, if you could go back, you would do differently?
Yes. And you have to understand something. And this is not specific to government, but to any large organization, including a government administration. People have different views on what the correct policies should be, what the correct operational measures should be. Those disagreements, those different views are voiced, decisions are made, and then everyone marches in unity together. That is the nature of a large organization, and the government is no different.
But just so I'm clear, that are you suggesting you your view, your own personal views about how to operate this were at odds, or there was a distinction between your personal approach and how you would have wanted to do it and how maybe your bosses wanted to do it?
I don't want to get into the deliberative process. We're one team and it's one effort, but this is not a revolutionary concept, that there are disparate views when one has many people involved in the decision-making process.
He was real delicate about it, but you heard exactly what I just heard. What's he doing there? He's making sure, if the hearings do come after he's gone, that he's setting himself up for, wasn't me. I didn't want to open up the border. I didn't want to bring 14,000 Haitians in overnight. I didn't want to fill up Springfield, Ohio. I didn't want to bring that rapist in. Wasn't me. The communist fears being found for his crimes, and the right has never had the will to do it. And that's why that ratchet stays a ratchet. That will stop when government people start getting arrested, as I've said many times before. Not one or two government people arrested. They need to be obliterated. Just like my blender. What, Chris? The obliterator blender is the best freaking thing I've ever bought in my entire life. Premium blender. And I know there's all these, well, we're the best blender out there. Obliterator? You realize Chefman went out and found the motor guy they like? How can the thing handle 20 years of daily use? You can't believe the stuff we put in ours. How can it handle that? Well, quality was a focus. Quality was a supreme focus of Chefman. And now they have the obliterator. It won the Red Dot Best Design Concept Award. My wife loves it on the counter. We use ours every day, oftentimes twice a day. Want the best blender you've ever had in your life? Chefman.com. C-H-E-F-M-A-N.com. Or you can go pick it up in the nearest Walmart if you want it. The Obliterator. Gosh, I love this freaking thing. All right. Let's talk. You know what? Let's talk a little bit of history. Then we'll go back to normal times. Hang on.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. You can leave us voicemails. Since we don't really do phone calls here, 877-377-4373.
Jesse, I live on the East Coast and I've had it. What's the better choice, Montana or Wyoming? Seriously, thanks.
Wyoming or Montana? Okay. So first of all, for you Easterners, Southerners, Californians, people thinking about making the trek into the Rocky Mountains, one, great move. Great move. It's just the most beautiful place in the country. But I'm just going to explain a couple things about living there that I'll get into the Montana-Wyoming thing because they're very similar. First, I know this is a very, very obvious point, but winter is an entirely different animal there. I'm not saying you can't handle it or, you know, they're all superhuman up there. I'm not saying that at all. But you have to prepare yourself for 7 months of winter, 8 months of winter. I remember in Montana, just look, it's just a mindset. It's just your cold weather gear is going to have to improve. I used to sit around, and this happened to all of us. You would end up longing for things that normal people will take for granted. For instance, winter can last for so long that by the end of it, you'd be driving around and you would find yourself longing to drive on dry roads, just a regular paved road, something, if you don't experience it, you take for granted all the time. Everyone listening in Alaska is nodding their head right now. Something you take for granted, something I take for granted now that I live in Texas. I've never gone extended periods of time at all without having a dry road surface, having to adjust your driving because everything's snowy or everything's ice. In Montana, you can go 6, 7, 8 months without laying eyes on dry roads. I'm not talking you out of it. I'm really not. I'm trying to prepare you. It's a different mindset in places like that. Another thing. And this is really basic for everyone everywhere, but I'll tell you something I try to teach my sons, although I could freaking kill them because this message is not getting through enough yet. When we're leaving, maybe it's raining here, maybe it's cold here, maybe it's hot here. I tell them whenever we're getting ready to get in the car and go somewhere, practice or something, you need to dress as if you will walk. As if your car is going to go into the ditch, you don't dress as if you're in a climate-controlled car. Dress as if you have to walk at all times. Dress that way, right? That's kind of a fairly old lesson, yet still those little meatheads, oh, we were only going to school, I can wear shorts, you know, whatever. But in Montana and Wyoming, this applies to that too, people die all the time. Die. Because their car goes into a ditch and they're not prepared. It is not an option for you to have a foil blanket or some granola bars, some water, something like that. You must at all times keep something in your car that will allow you to survive the night in your car in 10, 20 below zero. Because it is something that may happen to you there. And there are remote roads where no one's going to drive by or even see you if they do until the next day. What, Chris? Chris says, why would you want to move to the eighth circle of hell? Okay, so Texan, allow me to explain this to you. What's the appeal of it? Well, like I just said, it's very, very remote. Wyoming's the same way, very sparsely populated. Montana is the exact same way, very sparsely populated. And there are positives and negatives to that. As I just said, you're out on some two-lane road, you're up a canyon somewhere, you might be on your own for a day or two before anyone sees you. But remember I told you I used to go elk hunting with my old man, and we would have, we'd go elk hunting in various places in Montana. But he had this bow camp where he'd go bow hunting. That's a different kind of hunting for you hunters. I know you already know you use a bow, but you totally hunt differently. You have to bugle the elk in and then shoot him at the arrow when he comes in. It's intense. Anyway, we at elk camp, during the summer months, you would have to prepare, meaning we would go, we'd get our horses, we'd get our mules packed, and we would ride up into the mountains. And when it was dry in summertime, you would dig your facilities. We would bring non-perishable foods, bury them up there in barrels. We would bring, I mean, we built a little toilet. We dug out toilet ditch and brought a toilet seat up there so you could use, like, it was that kind of elk camp where you had to prep it ahead of time. But then winter would come and we would get back on the horses and we would ride into Montana. And you would be up in the mountains and you would look around and you were alone. Miles and miles and miles, any direction, 50 miles in any direction, there may not be another human being. You are alone in the mountains. See, look at Chris coming around on it already. He's already doing that. Sounds kind of cool. You see what I mean? Why would you live like that? Well, that's part of the appeal of living like that. The danger of it, the remoteness of it, is also part of the appeal of it. It's a very different way to live than what you're used to if you grew up in Mobile or you grew up in Boston or you grew up, and I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm really not. I prefer it over most of those things, but it is different, and you are going to have to prepare yourself for that kind of difference. Now, the last thing I will say on this, because I do want to answer your question, then we'll get back to politics. And I know we have to get to the Japanese World War II stuff, which I will get to next. I teased it and I didn't get to it because I got distracted. So these Rocky Mountain areas like Wyoming and Montana, in a smaller way, they suffer the same thing the rest of the states suffer. You know, here in Texas, Texas is red. Now, it's very red, but it should be the reddest state ever. Why isn't it? Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, California. California should be blood red. Go look at a congressional map of California. It's just red, except for San Diego, San Francisco, so the big cities. Now, big cities don't necessarily exist in Montana or Wyoming, but when you get into a beautiful mountain city, that is kind of one of the central hubs, like Bozeman, like where I grew up. Bozeman is completely left now. If you go into the city limits of Bozeman, you're going to have pride parades the same way you are in Manhattan. Same thing happens in Austin, Texas. Same thing happens in Birmingham, Alabama. Same thing happens every places in Florida. You know, we all love the free state of Florida. Gosh, but we practically live there anymore now, bouncing back and forth. Florida's got these little blue places. There are little blue places in Montana and Wyoming, so don't just pick a city and move there and think you're moving to red America. It's further to the right than Sacramento, but it's further to the left than you think you're getting. But you get outside of those places, the most wonderful, hospitable people. I remember it growing up. I've never lived any place like it. In Montana, when it's a two-lane road, just you in the other lane, right? Two-lane road, that's how we described it. People describe that differently. Every single person who drove by waved at you, even if it was just a finger off the steering wheel. Not the middle finger, Chris, and you waved back. It was how you did things. You, because it's remote, you help people. You never drove by someone in a ditch or something. You help other people. It's part of living there, and it was wonderful. There. Now I'll do Japan and back to politics. Hang on.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Jesse, consider reading the Medal of Honor for Commander O'Kane, U.S. Navy, after the sinking of the USS Tang. He and his crew were taken to Japanese POW camps where they remained until the war ended. After the war, O'Kane was awarded the Medal of Honor, while the Tang was awarded 4 battle stars and 2 presidential unit citations. The Tang was ultimately credited with sinking 33 ships, totaling 116,454 tons. I'll get to that in a moment. I'm a submariner vet and 20 years older than you. Love your show, and knowing someone younger is watching out for the young vets gives me hopes. Stay on the air as long as you can. Go Navy, he says. Gosh, jeez.
Why are you gay?
No, in all seriousness. Okay, so tons. I just wanted to do a couple quick things on this because some of this stuff can get confusing if you're not a history nerd. When you hear World War II vets, War in the Pacific vets in particular, although this took place in the Atlantic as well, when you hear them describe the tons, what about the tons? I want to explain what they're talking about. Like the Tang was credited over 116,000 tons. Those are goods that were heading to Japan or from Japan as Japan was trying to supply their other outposts in the Pacific. What we did to Japan in World War II, it's very, very fascinating. It's essentially a more modern version of an ancient siege. If I brought my army to your city and I laid siege to your city, what's the idea behind a siege? I'm hopefully going to take the city. I'm going to make efforts to take the city. But whether I can take the city soon or take the city later, your city's going to be getting weaker as I surround it. Why? I'm starving you to death. I'm starving you. You're not allowed to bring things in mass. You're not allowed to send things out. Trade stops. Your city under siege gets cut off. We, during World War II, did the most ridiculously massive buildup of the Navy, of any Navy in the history of mankind. There are guys, and there were guys during World War II who argued to this day, a pretty good argument, that we overbuilt it, that we underserved other portions of the military by going all in with the Navy. We had more ships than you can imagine. And what we did with that was, I'm going to set the Atlantic aside, what we did with Germany and whatnot. What we did with that was, we shut the waters in the Pacific down around Japan, sinking ship after ship after. And I'm not just talking about their Navy ships. We were sinking merchant vessels en masse. You were not allowed to bring shipments of stuff into Japan. The United States of America stopped it. If it was on the water and it wasn't our ship, it was going down to the bottom of the Pacific. And remember, as we talked about before, 1942 was our bad year. Really, all around, that was our bad year where they were still on the move. They were beating us up pretty good. They beat us up in the water pretty good. But after 1942, for the Nazis and the Japanese, that ended. They never had the upper hand again. They were always losing ground from that point. Post-1942... we just simply filled up the waters of the Pacific with submarines, destroyers, cruisers, battleships, aircraft carriers, all these different wonderful ships, and we just sunk everything we saw. And he brought up O'Kane. I believe his name was Dick. I think it was Richard O'Kane, if I remember right. I didn't look this up for him. But Chris, look that up. Commander of the Tang, Commander O'Kane. I believe it was Dick O'Kane, but Dick O'Kane and the Tang and his crew, to be on a submarine in World War II, really any time, as much as I hate giving credit to the Navy, I really admire the service. It's a tough service. During World War II, I don't know if it's still this way, it was purely volunteer, and understandably so. It was insanely dangerous. Remember back then, if your submarine went down under the water, it was Dick O'Kane? It was Richard O'Kane? Okay, I thought so. You were so slow, you were borderline not even moving. You wonder how these submarines got blown up. Well, they're under the water. The planes fly over and they see them and you can't move. destroyers on the surface looking for you will run you down like nothing if you're under the water. So you have to be on the surface if you want to move at any speed. But the idea of being on the surface, yeah, you need the speed, but you have no armor. You're not a battleship with layers of armor, an aircraft carrier. It is paper thin on a submarine, and submarines died by airplane all the time. Airplanes would find them, strafe them, you're finished. It was insanely dangerous to be a submariner in World War II, or submariner. I know everyone pronounces that differently. These guys like Dick O'Kane were alpha male hunters, though. When you read their stories, and there were a lot of these guys, Mush Morton, there were a lot of great submariner captains. These guys, all they wanted, give me working torpedoes and send me out. And they would go out into the deepest depths of enemy territory, and they would go try to shoot down everything Japanese they could find. And a lot of them died. Because the Japanese knew what was happening, and they knew how important it was to stop the submarines from stopping their merchant shipping. So they constantly had planes on patrol, ships on patrol, trying to find it. And these guys, they'd cruise these submarines right into some big Japanese harbor and start sinking ships. Now, that feels good when the torpedoes are landing. It doesn't feel quite as good when they're dropping depth charges on top of your face. Crazy bravery from the United States Navy in World War II. As much fun as I have mocking the other branches, I really admire the service, man. And I've told history stories about that before, that to be on some big floating ship full of fuel and bombs and bullets, and all around you, the steel is shrapnel if something explodes. To be on a major ship exchanging gunfire with another major ship, I couldn't do it. I don't have the guts. I could never do it. It terrifies me. All right, let's talk about the communist mindset. Let's go back to some politics, shall we? Why do they find value in communism? We'll get to that in a moment. Before we get to that, you know where you can find a valuable employee? It's not in the online classified section, I promise. It's not in the local newspaper. You're not going to find them putting something on the front door of your restaurant. You want to find quality people for your company, they're at ZipRecruiter. It's the number one hiring site for a reason. That's where the good employees are. And they're waiting there. And it's not as if you have some brutal lag time. You realize that. You go create your profile. And by the way, you try it for free. You go create your profile, the employees are waiting for you right now. I'm looking for, I can't find, they're all at ZipRecruiter. Want to try it for free? ZipRecruiter.com/Jesse is where you try it for free. That employee you're looking for, he's on ZipRecruiter as we speak. Are you going to join him there? ZipRecruiter.com/JESSE. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.